At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back for another episode of In the Jar, number 26. And we got a nice little lineup, nice little program put together for you today. We're going to talk about NCAA 25, which is coming out in a couple of days. We'll talk about different game modes, specs, bells and whistles that you would not expect for EA Sports to be putting on a video game. We'll talk about the state of college football and whether one revered coach deserves his place in the Hall of Fame. God rest his soul. There's one signing high profile in the NFL this week that we'll talk about, but we'll look into the NFL Sunday Ticket court case, a couple of potential moves in the league to come, a new facility, and what goes into the draft interview process. All these things on In the Jar this week. Let us know what you think. Hit that subscribe button. It helps us out a lot. And let's get right to the show. Here's episode 26. I got five on it. Don't know the words. I got five on it. What do they got five on, bro? Is it on a sack? Little $5 nug, you know what I'm saying? What if they got 10 on it or 20 on it? You know what I'm saying? I don't know, man. Could be with inflation, you know, it could be I got 35 on it. Head over to the see, I don't even know if he's talking about weed or something else. It's kind of hard for a white boy like me to decipher, but it's fun to sing. You know what I'm saying, baby? Episode 26, In a Jar. Your boy, Dupe, on the scene right here. We sitting over here on a hot Phoenix day. About damn 1:15. I think it was 1:17 when we were on our trip this weekend in Washington, D.C. And let me tell you, brother, that damn humidity that we Southerners and East Coasters have always dealt with. Let me tell you this, okay? You strap the pads on in damn August, July, as a college football player. And I was telling this story the other day, man. I'll never, ever forget strapping on the pads for training camp in Birmingham, Alabama, in the middle of August, late July, early August, middle August. All the way down to late August, and then you start to get to cool down a little bit. But strapping them pads on when it's 92, 93 outside with 90% humidity. You damn running around with this equipment on, feeling like you're breathing damn water. You know, it ain't like that out here in the desert. And, you know, everybody out here in Phoenix wants to say, well, you know, I'd rather go east where it's cooler. It's like, man, I'm walking around damn Washington, D.C., and just freshly showered in the morning, ready to get out, go do some damn activities. And about 10 minutes into walking around, you're feeling like you need another shower again. And it's weird, bro. We spent the whole day, me and Allie spent the whole day on Monday just kind of walking around. Our flight was that evening back here. And let me tell you, you check out of the hotel early morning, you get to go walking around. I can't speak enough about the damn DC subway system. Okay, been feeling really autistic about that. You load your damn Smart Trip, whatever the app's called with the transportation system, load it up with $10. You should be cool for the next two business days. And you damn, you take your phone. You ain't even got to open the app. You just take your phone and you just boop. You ain't even got to open nothing. In fact, my phone died while we was out and about. I've been doing this thing where I don't charge my phone at night. And on this particular trip, it did come back to bite me. My phone died midday while we were still out and about on Sunday, I believe. My boy Pity's wedding was on Saturday night. We was going out and about on Sunday. And my phone died. And the damn subway attendant, whatever the hell you call him, told me, yeah, you should be able to scan that when your phone's dead. And this was before my phone was dead. I was like, dude, no. Ain't no way that works. Sure enough, my phone dies. And we walk up to the thing. I'm skeptical. I'm thinking I'm going to have to talk to one of these damn subway attendants again. First one I dealt with was lovely. I can't remember her name, but she was a black lady. Walked us all the way down to the damn car, the damn train. She was great. And that's another thing. The people in Washington, D.C. are very nice. I wasn't expecting that. It's almost like you're in there's a remnants of Southern culture there. The food was good. Obviously, all the damn buildings are beautiful. The architecture is beautiful because it's paid with damn taxpayer money. And you know, the politicians, the people working there, they think highly of themselves, so they want to walk into a building with some nice damn bells and whistles. You know what I'm saying? But sure enough, you know, my phone died. I'm thinking I'm going to have to go talk to a damn subway attendant and say, look, I got bread on my account. I just need you to let me through so we can go back to the hotel. Sure enough, I tried it. My dead ass phone, bang, beep, let me through. As impressive as all get out, man. Took me a couple of trip or two to figure out the map and the different colors on the map, what lines go where. But let me tell you, man, I mean, the whole thing's underground. The routes are much more direct than if you drove. And we didn't know anything about the damn subway system before we got to DC. And so we actually tried to rent a car. And I'm waiting for my physical ID to come in the mail. I got a new one, but my digital one is still working, still humming, and we couldn't rent a damn car because you ain't got a physical ID. So I'm sitting here saying, look, hey, it's on the app. I'm showing you my ID. I'm showing you I'm licensed to drive. Nope. We need a physical copy. Okay. So we didn't rent the damn car. Damn Hertz charged me a no-show fee, even though your boy showed. So, going to be a good 30 minutes of my life on a toll-free number talking to robots until you finally get the agent. And then they say, well, technically you didn't show on paper. And I'm going to say, listen, your company obviously ain't gotten with the times. The reception lady that was trying to check me in didn't even know you could have a digital ID. So shouts to Arizona for having a damn digital ID. I think only a few other states do it. But yeah, DC was great, man. Humid as hell. One of my best buddies in the world got married to the lady of his dreams. We stayed in old Bethesda, Maryland, which is in the car about a 30-minute drive from DC, but you hop on that damn subway, boy. You get down there to the Capitol in 15 for $2.25. It's real cool. When you go to DC, don't rent a car because you ain't even got to pay for an Uber, G. You know what I'm saying? Talking about some whiskey been in hell bound type deal. You know what I'm saying? You go out to the bars. I ain't got to call an Uber. I hop on a tram, walk over to the closest station. And it's not like the stations are hella spread out either. They got them pretty much everywhere you can fathom being. So, I mean, yeah, man. Shit was cool. What else? You know, there's some stuff going on. Not much stuff going on in the football world other than NCAA 25 dropping here in the next couple of days when y'all be seeing this. So apparently EA Sports is really tricking out all of the different aspects of the game, which I didn't expect, and we'll get into this a little bit later. But yeah, you got NCAA 25, you got one signing that happened, but basically, man, we're just sitting around in the wee hours of the off season. We're right there. We're getting right close to dawn, shining on football season. But we ain't there yet, and things is quiet. I know there was a bunch of videos that dropped about the New York Giants. It's some kind of Hard Knocks production, and it kind of took everybody through the interview process with some draft prospects, some former draft prospects. So that was pretty cool. We'll show a clip of that. But I mean, golly, boy, I can't stop thinking about how people think humidity is better than desert heat. It ain't. That oven heat, boy. That open up the oven, hit you right in the face type of heat, boy. I'll tell you what, my round of golf yesterday hit a drive. Didn't feel like I hit it too well. Ended up in the fairway. And then, go to track the shot. It said 330. And I said, man, I ain't hit a drive 300 yards to my knowledge in my life. But that's what the damn app said. And then what kind of makes me feel like the geographical parameters within the 18 Birdies app, that's the app I use to score my golf rounds and track the length of my shots. I was kind of thinking, well, damn, the geographic parameters of this app on this particular course must be messed up because I took out a 7-iron on a 150-yard par 3. Teed it kind of high. You know, I do that sometimes just to make sure I put it in play and relatively straight. Felt like I clipped it pretty good. It was high up in the air. Ended up well short of the hole, and I tracked it on 18 birdies again, and that shot said it went on a 7-iron, 110. So, could be my judgment of how hard I'm hitting the ball, how far I'm hitting the ball being wrong, but I just can't imagine the fact that I hit a drive 330 yesterday. I just cannot fathom it. So, You know what I'm saying? All right, let's get into some juice here. James Clear, we'll start it off. Three ideas. The first minute of action is worth more than a year of perfect planning. I like that. But what about the action lacking intention? What if the action lacks some sort of clear vision towards a brighter future for whatever the person taking action, whoever they are? What about that? I believe in the principle. Two, one of the great mistakes in life is suffering for years because you didn't want to feel foolish for 5 minutes. And it's got some bullet points.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
To support whatever, to support the claim. You don't want to apologize, so you let a relationship deteriorate. You're scared of the sting of rejection, so you don't ask for what you want. You fear people will say your idea is dumb, so you never start the business. Nobody likes feeling foolish, but the feeling fades quickly. The willingness to endure 5 minutes of discomfort turns out to be a meaningful dividing line in life. So we'll get down the newsletter a little bit, hum along, but I feel like the idea I'm getting from this is like a quick act that might be uncomfortable pays off a lot more dividends than just putting in a bunch of time doing something that you remain comfortable doing. I don't know. I'm just me. Number three, in my early 20s, I wrote a list of ambitious things I wanted to do in life. Go bungee jumping, create a movie, start a business, that sort of thing. I did a few of them, but not most. Looking back, however, that list was incredibly valuable because it taught me the usefulness of chasing bold ideas, even if they never materialized. The dreams that didn't happen changed shape and led me down other interesting paths. The important thing isn't to achieve all your dreams, but to keep dreaming. Your desires change as you learn and grow. Old dreams will spawn new dreams, and eventually one of these newer, more refined visions will find their moment and become reality. Yeah, man, I feel like that started to happen to me a little bit early in my career, where I started realizing, like, okay, a lot of the things that we kind of dreamed into existence as a kid and a young adult aren't really viable anymore. And I feel like a lot of folks kind of let that die. I feel like I did too for a little bit, and it never fully dies. You know, that inner child, that voice inside telling you, no, we want to do, you know, whatever. But, you know, that voice can be just completely pushed down and forgotten about, neglected. And then at some point, you know, that voice will finally cry out and say, fuck this. You know what I'm saying? And that's when a lot of freakouts happen. I feel like that's when a lot of psychotic breaks happen. That's when, you know, a relationship blows up because you know, little thing by little thing, the person that's sacrificing that inner voice, that inner child, is, you know, kind of absorbing these micro transgressions against oneself. And finally, it gets to be too much. And then, and you don't know why. You know, I've been here before. You don't know why, but you just freak out. You just break. You just, you know, let it out on whoever's around. So, you know, on one hand, if you nurture that inner child, inner voice, it's going to pay a lot of dividends, because you're going to think, you know, you're going to think about things that most folks would think were crazy, but you don't think is crazy, and you end up achieving them. And that'll pay dividends, because you're aligned with your purpose and your damn inner voice is probably flourishing, happy. But then on the other side of that coin, if you neglect it, it can get really nasty. So it looks like Bill Belichick is joining Inside the NFL for this upcoming season. He's going to be on there with Ryan Clark from The Pivot. He's going to be on there with Chad Johnson, and he's going to be on there with Chris Long. It's been a long time since damn Chris Long has played football, and I don't mind him in the booth. I think, like everybody, he's, you know, there's some CTE moments, but I shouldn't even say that. I'm really thinking about Greg Olsen right now. You remember that season where he did Monday Night Football in the booth, baby? That boy was real deal CTE SPN upper. So, Bill Belichick, he's going on Pat McAfee's show. I'm looking at a clip of it right now where he just provided some great insight on some of the kids that were coming up in the draft. I think it was pre-draft he went on there. He's probably been on there more since then, but provided some great insights on quarterback play. He was breaking down Daniels, Drake May, and Caleb Williams, talking about their feet. Michael Penix was in there too, in the film that Belichick went over with Pat McAfee on his show, and the analysis was great. I saw a clip of it weeks ago, and I'm still thinking about it, obviously. So he's going to be great on Inside the NFL. I'd be just really hard-pressed to not say that he's going to end up getting a job somewhere next offseason, Bill Belichick. I really believe that, because he's Bill Belichick, you know? Set aside the damn 26-year-old girlfriend. Set aside, the issues he and Robert Kraft started to have, or him and Tom Brady. I mean, set that all that aside, man. I mean, the guy understands the game. He loves the game. But he's going to be joining Inside the NFL for this season, because there's no coaching openings. What else? Just covering football headlines from the week. Okay. The NFL is open to private equity team ownership of up to 10%, Commissioner Roger Goodell says. So I guess after reading this article, I came to the conclusion that for a long time, the NFL has been opposed to private equity firms coming in and having minority stakes in teams. But it says here, rising team valuations have caused the NFL to rethink its policies about private equity firms owning teams. And so this is kind of another, in my opinion, NIL level floodgate, except it's over in pro football instead of college football, where if you bring private equity firms into the picture in pro sports, because obviously if this happens with the NFL, it's going to happen with other sports leagues out there. If you bring private equity into the discussion, these folks who are not football people are going to start to have a say on every, as minority owners of a team, on every single thing that goes into promoting and upkeeping a football franchise. So these private equity firms, they could have a say on who goes on the field, who gets cut, who gets drafted. Hopefully not. Hopefully they'll be intelligent enough to leave that with the football people. But technically speaking, you look at an owner, you look at majority owners in the league, owners like Robert Kraft, owners like Jerry Jones, that do directly, Mike Brown with the Bengals, that do directly have a say on the football side of things. And so if you kind of get some power-hungry private equity firms getting in bed with the NFL teams, taking a 10% minority stake, well, mathematically speaking, they now have a say on 10% of everything that goes on in the facility, in the stadium. I'm sure they'd be tremendously, the private equity firms, I'm sure they would be tremendously helpful with the business side of things, whether that's promoting the organization, selling tickets, selling apparel, merchandise. You know, I'm sure they'd be great on that side of things. But if private equity starts to get involved with the football side between the lines, that's when I think you'll see the game really start to change. And I don't think for the better. Any other spots on here? No. So that was interesting. The other interesting headline is that the NFL, their case in court about the Sunday ticket stuff, they made a verdict and the NFL lost, kind of. They have to pay, according to this article from CBS, $4.7 billion in class damages out. And I think that's directly to the folks that purchased NFL Sunday ticket. Really, it says they're appealing it, but really this article is just a video. So there's nothing really contained in here. This is from CBS, but they're appealing. I'm sure the NFL's got the best lawyers in the world, so they could probably work that down a little bit, but damn, you know what I'm saying? $4.7 billion, that's probably still a good chunk of change even for the NFL, and I bet that that case might have something to do with Goodell reconsidering allowing private equity companies to come in and own teams. You imagine if you could start to buy stock in certain NFL organizations? I think you're able to do that with a few teams, ownership groups. I think Atlanta, the ownership group that owns the Braves, is one of them. There's some soccer organizations that are publicly traded. So, you know, interesting stuff on the football side. I think we got a few more. I guess this works in relation to where we were headed. So here's the first kind of on-screen thing of the day. So this is the, if an NFL fan wanted to watch every single game of the season, this is the monthly breakdown of what they would have to pay. So you got YouTube, Peacock, Amazon Prime, Netflix, ESPN Plus, NFL Plus. So monthly, that'll total out to $135 a month. You multiply that times 5 months, it's $670. So I saw a lot of damn people on Twitter just quote tweeting this and photoshopping it. And they throw like Stream East, you know, that illegal streaming platform down there on the where it says $670, and it'd be like a Stream East logo and $0. And it's like, dude, NFL is, I bet they're missing out on millions of dollars from people to just stream illegally. You know what I mean? Like, they probably think, especially with what I'm reading and hearing about the court proceedings with the NFL and Sunday Ticket, is they say, well, we're a premium product, and that's why we feel that we can charge these prices. And it's like, dude, if you just lowered the prices to something that's more affordable for the common man. And a lot of common men probably just pay this, and it affects their bottom line financially, which is kind of not cool in its own right. But it's like, dude, if they lower these prices, I can't imagine how many more subscribers they'd add, how many more people they'd have watching their games. And they were probably, ironically, if the NFL lowered their prices on watching games in general, if they lowered their prices, I guarantee you they'd see more revenue, because less people would stream illegally and just say, oh, you know, I'll pay the $5 a month. I'll pay the $10, $15 a month for everything. And we've talked about it before on the show, but we're in a weird era where cable TV is on its way out, streaming services are on their way in, and the streaming services are all elbowing, nudging, budging, pushing, trying to be that guy, right? I'm talking about the streaming services. And there'll start to be some deals. There'll start to be some consolidation where, you know, that graphic we showed on the screen, it might end up being two of them or three of them that you got to buy subscriptions to watch every game. That's going to improve. But, you know, with growth comes some pain, and the streaming industry's boomed. Therefore, you know, some of the fans are feeling a little bit of pain having to buy, what, 2, 4, 6 different subscriptions to watch every NFL game if you're doing it the right way. So it's cool. That's the business side of professional sports, and it's changing a lot. But I was talking about that damn Giants Hard Knocks deal. Here's a clip of them interviewing Malik Nabers, who the Giants ended up drafting this guy. He's a receiver out of LSU.
I had an LSU tape on. I watched that Nabers dude. Dude's a baller.
Nabers or Tom?
Nabers.
You watch him?
I watched him all day today.
Yeah, he'll be a good interview for us.
How do you handle losing? Be straight.
Not at all. I really hate it. I hate losing more than I love winning.
Okay, and then how do you handle not being involved early in the game?
How do I handle it?
Yeah.
I handle it pretty tough, especially, you know, during the week.
That's what I'm looking for.
Been in the offense, you know, in the week, you know, putting in the work with the one offense, getting a lot of plays, you know, known to be called for me. So if I'm not in those plays and not getting the ball, you know, I'm pretty hard on it.
I don't mind that. You know, I want guys that want to get the ball, but you, and I want guys that hate losing, but you got to learn how to harness that a little bit. You know, I don't mind a competitive juice, man. You need some dogs. I want guys that want the ball. You know, sometimes you lose. I mean, I lose it too as a coach, but got to learn how to harness that good.
I saw another clip of this of Jaden Daniels, the LSU quarterback that ended up going to Washington, and he was sitting there in this interview, the same type of deal, Jaden Daniels with a whiteboard next to him and a marker. And Daboll was just sitting there saying, like, you know, 32 scat right, Tulsa, rocket ship, Tiger, blast 3-on-1. And he was, like, giving him plays, but then he was also saying, like, all right, change the Z to the X, change the X to the Y, change the Y to a – you know, a T, change the H to the B, and like he threw all of that at him. He's like, change all of this. Didn't pause a second, knew exactly what he was doing, and then, you know, told him to repeat a play to him. And I was sitting here like, shit, dude, I feel smart, I feel mentally sharp, I wouldn't be able to rattle this off, you know. And then you got old Drake May from North Carolina coming in and just nailing all of them. And I was like, how do you do that? Some guys just, I don't know, some guys just think about the game in a different way, and it just clicks. And maybe it's damn hours and hours staying up at night studying for it like a damn exam. That's probably part of it. But, man, when I was in a college football locker room, there were some guys that I met, you know, originally I was like, dude, this guy's dumb as a box of rocks. And then we go into a damn you know, meeting and in front of like 100 people, the coach would just single them out and be like, you know, so-and-so, what do we do in this situation when it's 11 personnel and it's 3rd and 10 and, you know, you're the why, what call are we making? And they would just like unflinchingly know the answer. And I'd be like, shit, you know, I wouldn't have been able to answer that. I don't know. I don't know if my football IQ was ever where it needed to be. I love watching the game, and once you get out there and you're shaking and moving and playing, it's one thing, but the higher you get, the more of a mental game it becomes, the more you kind of got to, especially a linebacker and quarterback, the more you kind of got to walk up and be like, okay, all right, this guy's sorted out, that guy's sorted out, oh shit, the linebacker's up in the A-gap, I need to check for a blitz, help the pass pro, hot route this guy, whatever. On defense is a little different. When you're a linebacker and you're standing there, and let's say the offense sends someone in motion, you know, you got to change where you got to rotate. The safety's got to rotate. The linebackers might have to bump over a tad, and that might change the alignment of the defensive line. And the offense might just snap it really quick while the guy's still in motion, and you got to figure it out all in stride. So I feel like the defense, as a linebacker running the defense and making adjustments, that's a little more on the fly, figure it the fuck out before it gets snapped. Oh, shit, they snapped it. Whereas, you know, if you're a quarterback on the offense walking up, the game's going on your cadence, right? As long as you're within the parameters of the play clock, you can say, okay, Mike's walking up, bang, you know, check, check, bang, pass pro, running back, stay in, whatever, we're good, all right, ready, go, hit. But and then when you're an offense, you know, in college, or you know, Samford, we would run a hurry up, and it was a lot of RPOs, a lot of throwing the ball, and it was just kind of like, all right, we're good, hey, yeah, you know, or whatever. But you know, that side of the game too, the mental side of the game, I feel like football players don't get enough credit for being able to process and problem solve in real time, especially the higher up you get. In high school, you're just playing, right? You get a play, you have plays, you call them, whatever, but there's not many more adjustments that get made at the line, at least not as many as in college. And then from what I hear from my pro buddies, it's like, from, I thought college was a freaking mental shit show pre-snap. It's, apparently the pros is even more stuff to process. You got these intricate playbooks, and then you got all these different variations of different plays that you got to check in real time in order to do the right thing based on what the other side is doing. Interesting stuff. I would freaking melt down in one of these meetings, I feel like. Maybe not at this phase of my life, but definitely when I was that age, I would have damn melted down. I would have just said, all right, fuck it. You guys hate me. I'm not getting drafted. I'm done. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe I don't give myself enough credit, but I was impressed watching these clips. Okay, next deal. Tennessee Titans are signing Jamal Adams, Prez. Let's see the, are there any specs on the deal? He was a free agent for some time. Spotrac. Any details here? Yeah, there's no details on the contract. I would imagine they'll probably pay him like $3 or $4 million. They'll probably pay, I feel like the Titans will probably, you know, because Jamal Adams at age 29, guy plays physical. You know, I wouldn't say he's going to be in the league past age 33. I hope I'm wrong. He's a great player. But I think the Titans will probably – the contract details are not released. He's got a contract with the Seahawks through 25, and it's a four-year, $70.5 million deal. So he'll probably continue to get paid out whatever guaranteed money's in that, $38 million, and then the Titans will probably get a better deal on him. But that's really the only signing of the week. Is Jamal Adams of the Titans. The Titans have beefed up that secondary. They've got L'Jarius Sneed, who's the best young corner in the league. They've got Jamal Adams, that kind of veteran presence, anchoring everybody down. That's important, having a veteran that's been there before, done that before, able to, you know, ooze confidence into the younger guys when tough things go down. So the AFC South is going to be fun this year. All four teams look respectable in the AFC South. I really think it's going to be the AFC North and the AFC South that are going to be the two best divisions in football this year, top to bottom. AFC North, you don't have a team that isn't expected to do much. All the teams, fan bases are fired up for this season, the AFC North. And I think you could say the same for the AFC South. Especially if Anthony Richardson over there in Indianapolis, Indiana, stays healthy. I think it'll be a fun season for the AFC North, AFC South. All right, what's the next deal? Okay, so I guess someone from the media caught Aaron Rodgers out on the golf course. It looks like it's at Lake Tahoe, and asked about Devontae Adams.
I think Luke Getsy's going to utilize Devontae Adams good in the new Raiders offense.
I love Luke Getsy. He's a fantastic coach.
Awesome.
Love and I love Devontae. Can't wait to play with him again.
Great. Love to hear it.
Yeah.
How's your game today? How you hitting him?
Good. Harrison's playing really well. He's a little shy, but just trying to get him out of the shell.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's going good.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you. All
right. Can't wait to play with him again. There were some videos that got leaked from the new Netflix series that's coming out soon called Receiver. I guess they pivoted from the quarterback series because they couldn't find any quarterbacks that would be willing to do it, right? Think about having a camera crew following you around literally full time for the whole season. And the season's already tiring enough, so they couldn't keep quarterback going, so now they got receiver, and I think it features like Amon-Ra, St. Brown, Debo, Samuel, Devontae Adams. I think George Kittle's in there, and I might be missing one other guy, but there was a clip that leaked from the series with Devontae Adams getting really frustrated throughout the course of the season, whether it was getting wide open and the quarterback missing him. There was a clip where he was wide open downfield. Jimmy Garoppolo just missed him, and he comes back, he slams his helmet, or not getting fed enough. So I think that's going to feed into a lot of speculation on Devontae Adams' future with the Raiders, that receiver documentary, whenever it comes out. And then you hear Aaron Rodgers saying, I can't wait to play with him again. So Aaron Rodgers, we've talked about this before, he's got that kind of pull where if he went into the GM's office and said, I need you to go get Devontae Adams now, they're probably going to do that. And he's probably one of the few people in the league that have the power to go into the GM's office like LeBron has in the NBA and say, you need to go get this guy for me to throw to. And they would probably be like, yes, sir. Right away, Aaron Rodgers, sir. You know, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, especially if the Jets have success this season. They've, according to Pro Football Focus, the Jets have the number one graded defense in the league. So Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. Garrett Wilson starts to really ball out like he has been. And I think they added a few other pieces on offense, the Jets. But good for that reporter out on the golf course, just catching Aaron Rodgers and then getting a clip like this. Aaron Rodgers knew it too, where he said, again. Can't wait to play with Devontae Adams again. Next deal. Okay, this is trending. Thousands of Washington football fans are calling for the team to bring back the name Redskins and change back to their iconic uniforms. And I don't know how valid this source is. Some of these football accounts tend to clickbait a good bit. I can think of a few. JPA Football, Dove Kleiman, and apparently that's not even his real name, and a few others. So I think this is true, which is why I included it. But, you know, we were, I can't remember when I saw this. Oh, it was in an Uber. We were in an Uber for one part of the trip in D.C. And I saw like two or three cars that had a Redskins logo on them. You know, it's a historic brand. It's a historic logo. And that woke cancel culture, you know, that mind virus emanated throughout our country in 2020. I think changed a lot of things that maybe didn't need to be changing. I mean, even the Native American people, they loved having the Redskins kind of that brand represent them. They love it. It's just liberal white people that for some reason get some kind of virtue high out of taking up for all the underrepresented cultures. I don't know if that's a hot take. I don't know if that's too wild for me to say on here, but I mean, shit, man, if the literal race you're sticking up for or trying to stick up for says, nah, it's cool. And then you say, no, we need to get rid of this. It's like, is that about you or them? You know what I'm saying? What's the next deal? Okay. Yeah. To wrap up the pro football stuff, then we'll get into some NCAA 25 college football stuff. This is the new Chargers facility. And I'm going to blow it up here because it's kind of hard to see. Adam Schefter tweeted these two pictures out, and I was thinking, like, damn, like, why'd you have to make them so damn vertical, Schefty? I don't know. So I'm zooming in here. The entrance looks fire. Team cafeteria, coaches lounge. I'll tell you what, man. Team cafeterias are fire in the NFL. Obviously, they're fire. The food, I remember the Colts, they used to, during the season, they used to let us lowly entry-level salespeople eat in the cafeteria with everyone else for free. Didn't charge us nothing. And then I hear about some other NFL organizations that charge their players $20 a meal. And I'm thinking, like, Jesus Christ. But you got the cafeteria, team meeting room, lighting goes crazy, coaches lounge, weight room. Let's go to the next one, next slide. You got the locker room. And they got those nice lockers with the digital name, player name, player picture, player number. The equipment room, man. When I was in Indy, I tried to buddy up with the equipment guys, see if they would bless me every now and then. And sometimes they did. Recovery, goddamn cold plunge in there, baby. Little pool for physical therapy, sauna. Oh my goodness. This is a one-stop shop, baby. Kind of like Red Hawk Academy is for me. Press conference room. They got a big digital screen, it looks like. And then the exterior just goes crazy. So, you know, you're seeing teams spend a little money for their guys as they're making more and more money each year. So that's a good thing. Okay, NCAA 25 is coming out here in a couple days. I'm fired up for it. Probably going to do some streaming at some point. But the College Football Hall of Fame will soon have, and we're going to get into NCAA 25. I introed NCAA 25 too soon. That's going to be the beef of the back half of this show. But I saw this regarding college football. A College Football Hall of Fame will soon have a Mike Leach conundrum, and its organizers know it. He died with a 59.6 winning percentage. The requirement is 60%. So what's going to happen? Mike Leach is a unique case, the NFL tells Chris Van Heaney. I think we talked about Antonio Brown in the Pro Football Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago. With him, it's obviously the film was good enough for him. Obviously, the film's good enough. The accolades are good enough for Antonio Brown to be a Hall of Famer. But the personal side of things, you know, the legacy tarnishing, the clickbaiting for Antonio Brown will probably ensure that he doesn't make it into the Hall of Fame. Same thing with Pete Rose. Pete Rose is on paper a baseball Hall of Famer. But his outside activities affected his status on that. And so it's funny because this case is not completely the reverse, but kind of the reverse in that Mike Leach's winning percentage is quantitatively not good enough to make it into the Football Hall of Fame, but his personality and his impact on the game, you can't ignore it in terms of his status of getting to the damn Hall of Fame. I mean, look at this damn clip of Mike Leach here.
Look, I hate cats. You know, somebody really hates cats. And I've never figured that one out. A credit to cats, the ability to generate that much animosity, you know.
Contrarian.
And I'm not sure how close of a relationship some of these people are planning to have with a cat or why they would value the opinion of a cat or their perceived opinion of a cat. I'm indifferent about cats, but I've never understood how a cat can accelerate that much animosity. I mean, to me, it's just a...
Mike Leach had my college head coach, Chris Hatcher, on his staff for a long time. I think they worked together at Kentucky, which is obviously in my hometown, University of Kentucky, but Mike Leach is responsible for introducing the air raid offense into college football, right? Throwing the ball 40, 50, 60 times a game. That was not a common thing until Mike Leach started running programs in college football. And my head coach, Coach Hatcher, implemented that into our offense at Samford. It's been implemented into countless other offenses throughout the country. And that was Mike Leach's offense that he created. And apparently he created this offense based on war history that he studied, namely guerrilla warfare, right? Attacking aerially, attacking where your opponent isn't really expecting it. Mike Leach always talked about The Art of War by Sun Tzu, which is a book that I actually don't think I've ever read fully. I've tried reading it. It's hard to follow. But from what I know, Mike Leach took the teachings of war history, world of history. I just lost my deal. Mike Leach took inspiration from history in the world with war and implemented into football, and that's how you got the air raid offense. So the committee that decides on whether someone should be in the Hall of Fame or not should really consider 0.4% away from meeting that 60% threshold as a coach with winning percentage to make it into the Hall of Fame. They should really reconsider that because Mike Leach's impact on the game is obviously going to permeate for a long time. And I think that's all I had to say about that. Okay, so now this is when we'll get into NCAA 25. NCAA 25 is coming out in a couple days. Everybody's talking about the new features, the new game modes, everything like that. So we'll kind of dive in and see what this game has to offer. I wasn't expecting much because it's EA Sports, and EA Sports makes Madden, and Madden has been horrendously underwhelming for countless years now. But there's some hype getting generated around NCAA 25. We'll see if it's warranted when the game comes out. But there will be a feature called In case you missed it, in EA College Football 25, allowing you to replay iconic CFB moments you may have missed over the past decade. Moments like the kick six with Auburn or Alabama's title redemption against Clemson will be in the game. EA is cooking. So I wonder if you just watch back a simulation made by EA and you just watch it, or if you actually play it. I remember sometimes in Madden games years ago, when you first started up the game, there was something you had to play to get into the game. It was like a 2-minute drill in the Super Bowl. You know, let's say it was, you know, in 2000, and, you know, Madden Football 10 or 11, and, you know, you replay the last drive of that game with the Steelers and the Cardinals and the Super Bowl, and the Steelers drive down, and it's kind of like a guided experience. Like, it tells you where to throw the ball. You know, it closes in, like, it gives you like an eye view, like you're the quarterback, like all these different things. So that game mode will be interesting, because I don't know if you're just watching an EA rendition simulation of the game and reliving those big moments, if you play the whole game and it's guided. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But here's a video about NCAA 25 and some of the, I guess, some of the features of the game here.
Holy fucking shit. EA Sports cooked with College Football 25. Today we got a deep dive into Dynasty mode, and it's everything we could have asked for. The 12-team playoff is alive, and it's beautiful.
That's cool, not even
close to the best part. Recruiting is so damn intricate, my AI brain can't even comprehend it. We'll be able to DM players and scroll through their social media to find out about their past. Verbal commitments are in the game, meaning you will have to monitor your players to make sure they are not lying ass bitches and decommit before signing day. Early signing day and national signing day are part of the game as well. The transfer portal is detailed as fuck. It's meant to be unpredictable, meaning your shitty team could lose all its players in the blink of an eye. Conference realignment is here, and team jerseys and fields update based on realignment. Here is Clemson winning the Sugar Bowl as part of the MAC. Not one detail went unattended, and I'm afraid to say that EA really cooked with this one. No way this is the same company that makes Madden, for fuck's sake.
I don't know, man. We'll see. There's a lot of hype. New EA College Football game will have NFL players, too. EA is finally paying college football players to be in its new college football video game. So that means that it's no longer going to be HB number 25. It's going to be the actual guy's name. I don't know how the hell EA is going to keep up with. I mean, I think there's 6,700 D1 programs, and, like, you know, obviously multiply that to get the amount of players that's in there. So in order to have their name exactly right, like, there's going to be some errors. I feel like there's just so many college Division I college football players, and I doubt they'll include like D2 and stuff like that. But it says they'll be paying college football players, but it's also going to be paying NFL players too. And it looks like they're going to have like some of the greatest college players of all time. Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes will be part of Ultimate Team mode, including the new game. So it looks like they're kind of taking what they did in Madden with Ultimate Team and applying it to college football, and you can use past players. I wonder, I bet you could probably use, like, you know, for example, 2019 LSU football team. That'd be cool if they had the greatest teams of all time, and I'm sure they do. I think I had a few other, yeah. So I got to log in for that article. But it was some of the top quarterbacks in college football. Jackson Dart from Ole Miss being one of them. And then another headline I saw with college football is, if roster sizes are dramatically reduced in college football, would college football programs nix walk-ons? I think Pat McAfee went on a rant about this. Everybody's going to hate that if college football eliminates walk-ons. Conferences throughout the sport are mulling whether to reduce the size of FBS football rosters from as many as 130 to 140 players down to 100 players or fewer. I mean, in our locker room at Samford, I don't think we ever had more than 110, 120 guys at a FCS program. A lot of people don't understand the difference between FBS football and FCS football, and it's a lot harder to explain now because of the playoff, right? Because back when it was just bowl games, FBS, an easy way to remember that was bowl selection. I don't know what FBS stands for. I'm embarrassed to say that right now, but if you held a gun to my head and said, what does it stand for? I would say like football bowl system, bowl. So I don't know. But the difference between FBS and FCS is that in the past, in the FBS, it was the big programs. They would play in bowl games. And then FCS were the smaller D1 programs that would participate in a tournament, in a playoff, and it still is that way in FCS. We went to the playoffs my sophomore year at Samford, lost to Youngstown State in the first round, who eventually ended up losing to James Madison in the national championship that year. But the difference is, the big difference is that in FBS, according to my knowledge, so many things are changing. I could be wrong. FBS programs get 85 scholarships to give, so you got 85 scholarship players. And then FCS programs have 63 scholarships to give, and they could split them up however. So if they want to give a guy a half scholarship and another guy a half scholarship, that only equates to one. So it sounds like if programs were to cut down the amount of players in their building, walk-ons would be the first to go. The same plan, looks like NCAA and its conferences voted in late May to move forward with a multi-billion-dollar agreement to settle three pending federal antitrust cases. Under the proposed terms of the deal, the NCAA will pay more than $2.7 billion in back damages over the next 10 years to former college athletes who were deprived of earning money from their name, image, and likeness. Plan would also include a revenue sharing plan that would also allow schools to distribute about $20 million annually to their athletes. And I saw another article that said that the NCAA would maybe start paying athletes as employees. So there's a lot changing right now, and it's going to continue to change more and more. I mean, college football will probably be unrecognizable. It already kind of is in the next 3 to 5 years with everything that's changing and everything that's getting figured out around players being able to be compensated, not being considered amateurs anymore. And they really aren't. I mean, for the longest time, college football has been a job. And the only people that have been benefiting were the powers that be, the NCAA, financially, in the athletic programs and universities. But this is a big long article. I mean, there's so many more things that we'll be able to cover over the weeks and months of this show, especially as we get into the season. But that's kind of the state of college football, the state of NCAA 25, which is coming out in a few days. And got a couple clips from the week. This damn song has been stuck in my head ever since I saw it. And I can't even really pre-roll it. I've just got to show y'all this clip here. Hope this isn't a license thing. Can't be, bro. I wonder what they were damn saying, bro. Probably some damn communist shit. You know what I'm saying? Some damn communist propaganda. I don't know. Hopefully that damn song ain't licensed. It's been stuck in my head for the last 24 hours. To be the kind of fire. All right. Here is a clip that was created by AI. Literally, the whole dialogue is created by AI. It's replicated Joe Rogan and Elon Musk's voices in regards to something called Google Earth Theory. Check this out. This is some daunting ass shit.
People say life doesn't feel real ever since 2020.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's because it isn't. For the decades leading up to 2020, there was something going on that the general public never could have expected. Certain aspects of our technology weren't only just providing services for us, they were planning a dramatic shift of consciousness. Google Earth, for the last 25 years, has been creating a completely digitized, three-dimensional blueprint of the entire planet, a perfect database of 3D tracked images of what our external world looks like. While all of our devices that were inside the home, riddled with cameras, have been slowly building back-end digitized replicas of what our households look and feel like. Silently, this siphoned visual information was being harnessed to build a massive digitized replica of our world inside and out. A kind of complex virtual reality that perfectly mimics the real one. Our digital footprints were used to create hyper-realistic digital avatars in this world that look and feel just like us. This virtual reality was being prepared for us to step into.
Okay, wait. Even if they made this digital replica of the Earth, how would they put us in there without us knowing?
Our cell towers are essentially riddled with high-powered neural transmitters, which, with properly pressurized electromagnetic field disbursement, could be used to target the consciousness in every individual within range, and essentially absorb the consciousness out of the body and relocate it theoretically even into a digital environment. This process is called a snapshot conscious swap. It can happen instantaneously without the individual being able to grasp what had happened. They'd maybe feel lightheaded for a moment, think it was nothing more than a heat wave. And at some point during 2020, that is exactly what happened. It's why a lot of people couldn't smell or taste. The simulation was still catching up to synthetic scent and taste transmission.
I mean, that damn music is creepy as all shit. And the thought of that actually happening is creepy as all shit, because it's very well explained. And the other thing that is really daunting to me is the fact that a robot was able to conceptualize this whole subject matter, this whole topic of conversation, obviously replicate the voice of Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, but to also think about how a robot conceived an idea that I don't think is too far off base. I mean, my lady, I was showing her this earlier, and she's in cybersecurity, and she's sitting here thinking like, damn, that argument ain't too far fetched, brother. It ain't. And you get to a point where you're a company that has the power that Google has, the money that they have, and the people that are up high, they make enough money for 100 lifetimes. So then it gets to a dark place where it's more about power and control, controlling the masses, literally having the power to alter collective consciousness is scary. It's petrifying. When you fool with consciousness, like probably the people in power are able to do at this point in human history and technology. I mean, they could have done 1,000 things to us like that at this point, and we still won't know for a very long time. It's a daunting way to end the show, but this is episode 26 in the jar. We're happy to have you. We appreciate you staying this long. Hit that like button, comment your thoughts on this week's show, things that we should be talking about. And if we hit you in the chest at any moment during this program this week, hit that subscribe button. It goes a long way. You might not think it does, but it goes a long way. We love you. We appreciate you. This is episode 26 of In the Jar. We'll see you next week.